Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello there, everybody. This is the Guy James Show, coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Glad to have you all of you along with us today on this live version of the Guy James Show here on a Wednesday afternoon. Yes, indeed, it is Wednesday. So glad to have all of you along. Hello to all of you folks over at iTunes. My word, we've been getting a great response from the people at the iTunes site. So glad to have you aboard and welcome. We hope you'll join us every day. We hope you'll check in on the other programs on the Head On Radio Network. And we appreciate you learning. We've got a lot on tap for you today. As you know, one of the big stories of the day yesterday was the huge drop in the stock market, 416 points down. There have been various explanations for why it happened. Some of it is attributed to a electronic glitch they said they had, and others, we'll talk about it just a little bit later. We've got a gentleman by the name of Dean Baker. He's the co-director of the Center of Economic and Policy Research, and he'll be joining us from Washington coming up in, about 15 minutes or so. So we'll be ready to talk about that and the economic condition of the United States right now. And there's reason to believe that we may be headed for trouble. Alan Greenspan has been talking the dirty word recession. I think many of us have been forecasting that for a while now. I don't know what the official... And let me be clear here. I'm not an economist, but like many of you, I do keep track of the forces that do drive our economy, and I see some red flags on the horizon, so we'll be talking about that coming up in just a few minutes. A variety of things to talk about today, and we do hope you'll join us here on the program, and you can do so by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us on the program. And as we mentioned yesterday, we're instituting some new rules here on the show. Not a rule, it's a request, really, since we don't screen our calls. You go live on the air when you're here, and that's nothing but trouble for a lot of radio hosts, but we take our chances here since we don't have to worry about FCC rules. And we ask that you stick to the topic that we're talking about, unless we're declaring it an open mic day where you can say anything you like and talk about anything you want. But if we're on a subject and you call, we hope you'll stay on the subject. Okay, that's not too much to ask. And also, no more than one call per day. Well, it is February 28th, the very last day of February, this not being leap year. Of course, we did hear Mr. Bush last week talk about, let's hear Mr. Bush again here.
5 years ago, this date, September the 11th, was seared into America's memory.
Well.
Oh, look out! Look out!
Today we are safe.
This is not the one we thought.
Not yet safe.
Help me! Somebody help me!
For America, 9/11 was more than a tragedy. It changed the way we look at the world.
Mashed potatoes, gravy, and cranberry sauce!
That's not the cut we were looking for. We don't know what happened to it. One of the little computer monsters came up and got it, evidently. But we were talking about a speech which Mr. Bush gave last week, whereby he was talking about the events of February 30th. Unusual indeed. The White House never did explain that. 866-546-5254. What I consider the scandal of the day today, an absolutely pitiful story. It makes me sad. It makes me ashamed. It makes me wonder how the hell some people get their jobs and keep their jobs, both in the private sector and in the military. I know by now you've all heard, probably you've all heard about how the wounded GIs are now censored from talking about their neglected treatment at the Walter Reed Military Hospital. Walter Reed patients are told to keep quiet. Soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center's medical hold unit say they have been told that they will wake up at 6 a.m. every morning from now on and have their rooms ready for inspection at 7 a.m. and that they must not speak to the media. The story goes on to, and this is from the Army Times, by the way. This isn't from that left-wing Washington Post or that left-wing New York Times that the righties are always talking about. No, this is from the Army Times. And they go on to say that it is very unusual to have daily inspections after coming out of basic training. So here we are, these wounded soldiers are now going to have inspection every morning at 7 a.m. Some soldiers believe this is a form of punishment for the trouble soldiers caused by speaking to the media. One medical hold unit soldier said, speaking on conditions of anonymity. The soldier said that they were also told their first sergeant has been relieved of duty and that all of their platoon sergeants have been moved to other positions at Walter Reed, and 120 permanent duty soldiers are expected to arrive by mid-March to take control of the medical hold unit, the soldier said. The Pentagon also clamped down on media coverage of any and all Defense Department medical facilities, to include suspending planned projects by CNN and the Discovery Channel, saying in an email to spokespeople, it will be, in most cases, not appropriate to engage the media while this review takes place, referring to an investigation of the problems at Walter Reed. Well, doesn't that just sound familiar? They can't talk about it while this review takes place. Doesn't that sound eerily similar to, this is an ongoing investigation and I cannot comment? These people are just horrendous. Just despicable that they would come out with a rule like this. And again, this story from the Army Times, not from some liberal publication, as the righties would like to say. So I am deeply ashamed. Americans should be outraged at this. This says, in other words, get your rifle, go to Iraq, get in your Humvee, get your ass blown up, or get your head half shot off, and keep your mouth shut. Sacrifice for the United States Army, the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, the Coast Guard. Sacrifice, but keep your mouth shut. Because we don't want anybody to know that there's mold growing right above your hospital bed. We don't want anybody to know that the shower floor is falling through. We especially don't want anybody to know that there are mice and rats running through where we keep our wounded soldiers. No. That would be terrible for them to find out. It's not terrible that it actually is happening, that it actually did happen. That's not the problem. The problem is that the public is finding out about it. So you will not say anything. The fault lies with you, our wounded soldiers. You are the cause of this problem. The rats, the mold, the filth, the lack of good care in some of these units. That's not the problem of Walter Reed. That's not the problem of the military. That's not the problem of the Bush administration. It's your fault for telling the press about it. That's what this edict is saying. Could there be anything more shameful than this? I don't see how. I really do not see how you could humiliate members of the United States military who have sacrificed their bodies for this ill-begotten mission and then tell them they're going to have daily inspections every morning and they're going to keep their mouth shut and they're not going to talk to the press. Wasn't it one particular administration and one party that keeps talking about being personally responsible? And here we have the Army, obviously backed by the Bush administration, wanting to shift the responsibility, not to those who have allowed this to happen. Oh, no. Not to those in high offices that have overlooked us for God knows how long. No, no, no. The responsibility is not theirs. The responsibility lies with those poor kids who are in those horrible places that have told the press what it's like and invited the press in to see it and told the press what they're actually experiencing. My God. How low can some people sink? Just how low can they go? Can't get any lower than that, in my opinion. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And also, while I'm talking about shameful things, and we've got several shameful things we want to talk about today. Have you seen these ads on TV that are running quite a bit now on MSNBC? I think I've seen them on CNN as well. They may be running other places too that I don't know about. The payday loan companies. Have you seen those ads? Nicely produced ads. That shows the payday loan people in their suits and ties in their nice offices. They don't show them with the bulletproof glass that's usually in front where you got to slip the money underneath the little tray there. No. It shows it like a bank or a friendly office area with the people in their nice suits and ties and stand there smiling so nice. And then it's saying, don't borrow any more than you need. Be responsible. Never mind, we're going to charge your ass 500% on what you do borrow or more. Or more. Listen, I go into one of those places once a month to buy a money order for my neighbor. My neighbor sends a relative a few bucks every month, and I go buy the money order for him. And so I go into one of those places that offers the payday loans because the money orders there are only 39 cents. And being the frugal person I am, well, it's at the behest of my neighbor, actually. So I see the charts on the wall for the percentage of... Man, they think Al Capone was a thief. They think Al Capone strong-armed people. And here they are running these very nice payday loans. Borrow responsibly. Be responsible when you borrow. Don't borrow any more than you need from us because we're going to charge you 500%, maybe more on your loan. Man, what an offensive thing to see on TV. And if I were MSNBC or CNN, I wouldn't want anything to do with having these ads on my network, but they pay for them, so naturally they'll take them. I've seen some political ads some of the networks wouldn't take, but they'll take ads from the payday loan company. My, 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 my. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the festivities here today. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable. And I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We thank you for being with us, as always. And as promised, we now have our guest, Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Dean, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I cut things kind of close there, producer. Oh. Sorry about that. We wanted to talk to you today because the stock market lowering yesterday, 416 points, and all. Wanted to find out what you think the effects are on the on average Joe lunch bucket American, the people that we talk to every day?
Well, I think people do misread the stock market. There's two things to keep in mind here. One is directly, you know, should people be worried about the stock market? Well, for most people, it really doesn't make a great deal of difference, because the fact of the matter is that for better or worse, most people still don't have very much money in the stock market. You know, we see fewer traditional pensions, you know, that people work for 30 years at, you know, an auto company or something, and they get a pension when they retire. Fewer people have that. More people have 401ks. But even with, you know, the growth, and there has been big growth in 401ks over the last two or three decades, it's still the case that the vast majority, 75% of the population, still has less than $23,000 in the stock market. So for most people, they don't directly have a lot at stake. Now, the flip side of the coin is sometimes, not always, but sometimes the stock market's telling you something about the economy. And the stock market, I believe yesterday, I mean, I can't say why it was yesterday, but I think that investors are really concerned about weakness in the economy. And in that sense, if the stock market's falling because the economy is weak, that's bad news for people, because what that means is people might be, you know, as we get a weaker economy, they're going to see fewer jobs, and wages will probably grow less or decline. So insofar as the stock market's a harbinger of bad economic news, that's cause for concern. But the stock market going up or down by itself, in fact, you know, it's a little concern to most people, and could even be negative in the sense that, you know, one of the things I've written about is in the late 90s, we had the beginning of the housing bubble, which has continued to the present. And part of that story was people made all this money in the stock market, so they went out and bid up house prices. So in that sense, you know, if you're not one of those people lucky enough to have a big fortune in the stock market, you'd have been happier if the stock market was going down than going up.
Does it affect the lenders? Does it affect interest rates for the homeowners, the people out there buying homes or contemplating buying a home?
It can, but it's not even clear in which direction. So in what happened yesterday is the stock market plunged, interest rates fell also, because what was going on is that people were saying, well, they didn't think that, you know, they got worried about the stock markets, so they're selling off their stocks. And then they went out and bought bonds, and when you had more people buying bonds, that in effect pushed down the interest rates. So in that sense, you know, the falling stock market was good news for people who might have been looking to borrow money to buy a home or buy a car or for some other purpose. You know, interest rates fell. Now, again, that's just one day. It doesn't mean that will always be the case. But that can, in fact, happen, that, you know, a lower stock market could be associated with lower interest rates. And, you know, for most people, or at least many people, that will be good news.
Well, certainly it will if, like you say, if they're going to have enough jobs to be able to get a home loan, and the lower stock prices may translate into fewer jobs for people.
Well, but it's important to understand, it's not that because the stock prices are low that people have fewer jobs. It's because the economy is doing poorly that the stock prices are low.
So right.
The stock market isn't causing it. It's just, you know, it's in that case. You know, and sometimes the stock market has no bearing at all to the economy, but in the situation where it does, it's simply telling us, you know, investors are seeing that, you know, things look worse ahead, and in that sense, that's obviously bad news.
What percentage of the people do you say own a significant amount of stocks, something that would be significant in their household at least?
Well, being, you know, conservative or generous, I might say, in what you consider significant, it would only be about 25% of households, and that's, you know, that's taking a number of the low 20s, saying that, you know, if you own $23,000-$24,000 of stock, that's a significant holding. I mean, I wouldn't say $23,000-$24,000 is trivial, but on the other hand, you know, if you own $24,000 and, you know, the market fell yesterday by, you know, 3.5%, 4%, you know, you're talking about losing less than $1,000. That's not trivial, you know, but on the other hand, that's not devastating either. So, you know, even taking a pretty low definition of what we want to say is a substantial amount of stock, the vast majority, three-quarters of the country, does not hold any substantial amount of stock.
And it's not exactly like it was back on Black Tuesday or when it dropped a huge percentage. I think
we didn't see that sort of decline. I mean, it was a big decline. I actually haven't looked up to see, you know, how many declines we've had that were larger, but I'm sure it'd be at least in the double digits. You know, so this isn't back in '87 where the market just collapsed.
I think that was I think this was the largest one since. Since the Vietnam War, in numbers, in sheer numbers of 416, so...
Yeah, but the key thing is percentage.
Right. I think during the Vietnam War, it was If memory serves me correct, it wasn't much over 1,200 or 1,300. I could be a little bit off on that. But Alan Greenspan, he's back in the news. I don't think he ever completely goes away. And he's starting to say that dirty word that a lot of people don't like to hear, and especially people in politics and this administration and others don't like to hear the word recession. Does he? Alan's done pretty well over the years predicting things, hasn't he?
Well, he actually has a very mixed record because he got caught by surprise when he was actually calling the shots still. You know, he was back at the Fed in 2001. He didn't see that recession coming, so... So, you know, he was saying things look smooth, and then suddenly, you know, it was just about upon us. He said, okay, we got, you know, we have some serious trouble. So he didn't see that one coming. And, in fact, you go back to the prior one because he's been there. He was there a long time. So if you go back to 1990, the transcripts, you know, we know now what he was saying. We have transcripts of the meetings. And, you know, in June of 1990, when the recession had already begun by the official dating, in the transcripts he was saying, well, the economy looks pretty good for the foreseeable future. So his track record in that regard isn't that good. But I will say I was very struck by him talking about a recession because he had been very upbeat on the economy, very optimistic, and he's suddenly turning around, raising the prospect of a recession at a time when really few were. I mean, I actually myself have been warning of a recession because I see, you know, the fallout from the decline of the housing market likely being enough to throw the economy into a recession. But, you know, most of the forecasters, most economists at this point were saying that, no, we're going to have some slower growth, that, you know, everyone recognized at this point the softening of the housing market, but they were saying that, you know, that's going to stabilize and it's not going to spread over to the other sectors of the economy. And Greenspan looks like he doesn't blame on the housing market, which I do. I mean, I think we had a housing bubble there. But in any case, he is now saying that we might be looking at a recession later in the year, and that is a big departure from where he had been, you know, last time I heard any public statements from him.
I think so, too. I hadn't heard any inkling of that coming from him. You're mentioning the housing market. I happen to live in an area and am very familiar with another area. I live in Southwest Florida along the Gulf Coast and also have... relatives in Phoenix, and it seems that we're mirroring one another with what's happening to the housing bubble in both of these places. Prices are going down. The ARMs that people got in with the cheap housing, now their payments are going up and they can't afford their houses. A tremendous number of foreclosures taking place. Is it just very spotty, or is it all over the country?
Well, there's pockets. You're in about the worst places. You know, you mentioned those two spots, Phoenix and the west coast of Florida. Those are probably the two biggest bubble areas and the ones that are seeing the sharpest declines. Now, there are other places that are going in that direction, but not quite as far and as fast. But, you know, I think we will see spillover because we're really at the early phases of it. And, you know, this process is setting in place and setting in place everywhere. It's just that it's not, the other places weren't bid up quite as much. They didn't have quite as much speculative activity. But they still have a lot. And the story of, you know, the resetting of the ARMs, that's going on everywhere. The shutting down of the subprime market, you know, just to talk on the basic story here.
How important is that subprime market?
Well, subprime historically had not been important, but it really exploded in the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, we're talking about Alan Greenspan. This was on his watch. So what was going on there is that people who were nearly qualified for mortgages were suddenly able to get into the subprime market. They didn't have the credit that ordinarily would, you know, warrant giving someone a mortgage. And on the one hand, it's good to see, you know, a lot of more people with more moderate incomes to be able to buy a house. But in a lot of cases, these people probably got in over their heads. And in a lot of cases, they didn't understand the condition of their mortgages. Most importantly, that many of them were adjustable rates, and those will readjust at higher levels. And you will see a big increase in foreclosures. And now that you've seen this increase in foreclosures begin to take place, that subprime market is drying up, and that's 25% now of all homes are bought through subprime mortgages. So there's no way you could have the subprime market basically freeze up, as it's starting to do, and have that not affect the larger housing market. Because, you know, if you're not selling your home to, if you're not, I'll put it the other way around, if you're not looking to buy at the subprime, suppose that you're looking to move up into a bigger home, there's a strong likelihood the person who might be buying your place is a subprime borrower, and if they can't get the money, you can't sell your house, and then you can't move up to a bigger, more expensive house. So there's no way you could have the subprime market crashing, given how important that segment of the housing market is now, and not have it have a very big effect on the rest of the housing market.
And you have to wonder, you know, we hear talk about, well, the subprime companies gave a lot of people opportunities to own homes that ordinarily wouldn't be able to. You have to wonder, on the one hand, if they actually are doing them a favor, if they're burying them in an ARM loan that, you know, gets pumped up and they won't be able to afford that house in the near future anyway. So you have to wonder how much of an advantage that was for many of those people.
Absolutely. I mean, it was one of the things that some of us at least were trying to raise warning flags about, you know, last year, the year before that, because, you know, the problem was you had a lot of people out there, certainly the politicians, saying, oh, we want everyone to own a home. And, you know, I think it's good that if people want to, you know, buy a home that they're able to and, you know, that their economic circumstances allow them. But it's not always going to be the best thing for people. And say a lot of people got in over their heads, and you know, it's you know, I've had arguments with people that go, you're saying these people are too dumb. I go, no, it's not, they're too dumb. You know, you look at some of these mortgages. You know, I have a PhD in economics. It'd take me a while to figure them out. You know, I don't expect someone who's, you know, working for a living at you know, a retail clerk, or you know, working as whatever it might be, and you know, they get thrown a, you know, a mortgage document that's very long and complicated, and you know, they don't fully understand what's going on. On top of that, they have a realtor and a mortgage broker that are, you know, dying to make the sale because they don't get money unless they, you know, sell the home and get this mortgage issued. So they don't necessarily get good advice, you know, reliable advice from those people. So, you know, it's just not good policy, and you aren't helping someone when you put them in a home that they can't afford. It really could be devastating to them. That's their life savings, and if they suddenly find, you know, 2-3 years out they can't afford their payments and they have no equity in their home, you know, they suddenly have to move, they might have to declare bankruptcy. I mean, this isn't a good story.
I wonder how, you know, I'm wondering how scarce the subprimes are right now, because just last evening, here on local TV, I saw an ad from a lender offering mortgages, and, you know, you couldn't read the fine print underneath, naturally, but offering mortgages of $200,000 starting out at $46 a month. It was something like a quarter of a percent. And, you know, naturally you couldn't read the fine print, but there they are still trying to draw people into those.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it hasn't disappeared yet. It's getting there. Because the other part of this story that, again, you know, it's one of these things, it's just a train wreck waiting to happen. The other part of the story, of course, is that the people who issue the mortgages, they sell them in the secondary market. So, you know, whoever's issuing that mortgage, they probably have someone come in there, and they might well know this person probably can't afford to make the payments. They might be able to pay, you know, the first 6 months, the first year, but the rates are going to reset. They won't be able to make those payments. Now, we're nearly the traditional bank, if you think of the classic, you know, bank or savings and loan, they look at you and they go, wait a second, you can't afford these payments, you know, and they're not going to issue the mortgage because they don't want to, you know, they want to hand a mortgage that, you know, lend you the money you won't be able to pay back. But these guys are going to sell it the next day in the secondary mortgage market, so they don't care that, you know, that the person who's borrowing the money from them isn't going to be able to pay it back. They just want to issue the mortgage. That's when they collect their fees. Then they dump in the secondary market. Now, the reason why these loans are going to dry up, and they have to some extent, as you say, you know, they're still out there. You definitely could still get them. It's just getting a little harder. But the reason they're going to dry up is that secondary market is drying up because you have investors, and, you know, they're from all over the world who have been putting their money in the secondary market. They've been buying up these mortgage pools thinking that this was a totally safe investment. They've been thinking it's like they're buying up U.S. government bonds. You know, it's a totally safe investment. And now as these default rates are rising, suddenly these investors are realizing, wait a second, those mortgage pools are not safe. And, you know, if you're going to, you know, have a bond that risks going bad, you know, you're going to want a very big interest rate premium on it. You know, you're not willing to accept, you know, a government bond will give you, you know, around 5%, a bit under 5% today. You're going to want 7, 8, 9%
sure,
if you're, you know, think that, that this bond might go bad.
Well, I see there's in the neighborhood of 2.2 million subprime loans that are in default right now. And I also, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I read someplace that Freddie Mac won't even buy subprime mortgages
right now. That's exactly the sort of tightening that, you know, I'm talking about. So, you know, Freddie Mac realizes they're seeing the rising defaults, and they're just saying, you know, we're not going to get into this market. And it's also important to understand that, you know, the number of subprime defaults that are in default is very high, but it's rising extremely rapidly. And the reason why that is house prices, you know, it's this vicious circle where when house prices are rising, it's okay that, you know, maybe I am a bad credit risk, you know, my employment isn't secure, I just got a home that's more than I can really afford, but if it keeps going up in value, I could always go to the bank and, you know, borrow against the new equity and make my mortgage payments. A lot of people are doing that. But what happens once prices stop rising and start to fall, as they have been over the last year, suddenly people don't have equity to borrow against. So what's important is not just that we have over 2 million subprime mortgages in you know, in some phase of the default process, but that number's rising very rapidly, and it's all but certain to continue to rise, because with home prices falling, you have more and more people that have no equity to borrow against.
And wasn't that a driving force in the economy as well? People were living on credit from borrowing on their homes?
Absolutely. You know, people have been withdrawing money like crazy from their homes, and, you know, we have the data on that the savings rate, the national savings rate, turned negative in 2005, and it stayed negative all through 2006. We haven't had that since the first years of the Great Depression. And what was going on is people were borrowing so much money against their homes that it offset the money that, you know, people might have been saving in 401ks or, you know, bank accounts, wherever they might have been putting their savings. So we had massive borrowing, and that borrowing helped sustain the economy, helped get us out of the last recession, because, you know, people were, you know, using the money to you know, buy a car, or, you know, in some cases just pay their bills, whatever it might be. But, you know, when people no longer have access to home equity as a source of credit, it's likely to, you know, be a serious hit on their consumption, which in turn is likely to have a very big impact on the economy.
I gave the example on the program yesterday, and I actually know about this when I know the people involved, that during the bubble, about a year ago last August in this particular area, when they were, you could sell a house in one day, the speculators were going crazy, and everybody was jumping in on it. I know somebody that went out and bought a house for $400,000, which isn't a high price for a house in some of the areas around here, and borrowed $500,000 on it because the lenders said, "Fine, we'll give you whatever it was, 125% loan on this house." And now the ARM has moved up by several hundred dollars. The loan is up several hundred dollars. They've come out and reappraised the house at about $325,000 or $330,000, and they owe $500,000 on it. Can't afford the payments on it. And that's quite a mess, and I'm hearing more of that every day.
Yeah, I mean, there's accounts of that. I get people sending emails, and, you know, I hear these stories all over the country. Again, it's not everywhere, because not everywhere you had that sort of run-up in prices, but certainly, you know, along the two coast pockets like Phoenix, you had those stories. And again, you know, it's just, you know, people sort of threw caution to the wind. It doesn't make good sense for a lender to put that money down. It doesn't make good sense for a borrower to get that much over their head. But when everyone expects that the house price will just keep rising, then, you know, everything's fine. But, of course, that wasn't going to happen. And, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but, I mean, it was a predictable story. House prices don't just go through the roof. You know, you could have a period where house prices go up, but it's not going to keep going up. And when they get so out of line with the fundamentals, they're almost certain to come down. And, yeah, you already have a lot of people in that situation where, you know, they owe more in a house than it's worth. And, obviously, when that happens, a very strong incentive for people to default. You know, why pay $500,000 on a home that's worth, you know, $350,000?
Right, right. Well, Dean, I wonder if you could take just a moment. We mentioned a few moments ago, and I don't think there's anybody any more qualified to explain it than you. I've tried, and I don't get anywhere. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, can you give us a brief outline of who they really are? Everybody thinks that Freddie Mac, for example, is owned by the government.
It's a very good question. Yeah, Freddie Mac, both Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae is the older one, I believe. It goes back to the 30s. Freddie Mac, I think, dates to the 60s. But they were set up to create, I've been talking about the secondary mortgage market. This might get a little complicated for people, but the basic story is that if you go back to the old days, say before Fannie Mae was in existence, you know, basically people would go to the bank, go to the savings and loan, take out a mortgage on a house, and the bank would hold on to it. Okay, so, you know, you get a 25-year mortgage or whatever it might be, and you make your payment each month, and then after 25 years, you know, they would hand over the deed to the house, and that'd be the end of the story. What Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae did was they began to buy up those mortgages from banks and savings and loans. Freddie Mac originally just did business with savings and loans, so that was the original distinction, but that no longer exists. But Fannie Mae did business with banks, Freddie Mac, savings and loans. Anyhow, what would happen with those institutions was that, you know, I can go to the bank, take out a mortgage, and then they would call up Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae and said, do you want to buy the mortgage? And if the price was right or whatever, they'd work out a deal where they would, in effect, sell the mortgage to Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. And depending on how they worked out the arrangements, I might continue to make my mortgage payment to the bank, and then they would forward, you know, their payments each month to Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. Or they might even turn over directly and send me a note, say, hey, send your check directly to Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. Now, what happened further down the road, this is really in the 80s when this began, they began to bundle together mortgages themselves, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and then put them into pools and sell bonds against the mortgages. So what would happen then is people could buy the bonds. I could buy a bond where the income on the bond, I'm going to get interest on the bond, let's say I'll get 7% interest each year, that's based on the mortgage payments that people are paying into these mortgages. So in effect, what they've done is they've taken a whole pool of mortgages, say 1,000 mortgages, and they've issued bonds against that pool. And as long as people keep making their payments, I'll keep getting my interest payments on the bonds. What happens where you get into a problem is if those interest payments stop going through, well, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are still obligated to pay out the interest on the bonds, and ultimately, you know, when the bond comes due, say in 20 years or whatever the date on the bond is, they're obligated to pay that off. Now, you'd asked about, are they federal government institutions? They were initially. They were started by the federal government, but then they sold off shares, and now they're basically private institutions with the small qualification that in the language, and people argue about what this means legally, but I think it really doesn't matter what it means legally, but in the language of their charter, there's a commitment from the federal government to ensure their integrity. Now, what I'm saying, it doesn't really matter what that means legally, because as a practical matter, if it came to be the case that suppose that a lot of the mortgages that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae hold go bad, this is trillions of dollars in mortgages or bonds issued against those mortgages. If the underlying mortgages went bad and Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae didn't have the money to make good on the bonds, I don't think anyone really doubts that the federal government would bail them out.
Yeah.
You know, because the financial implications of that would be enormous. So whether or not they would be legally obligated to bail them out, I really don't think matters, because who's ever sitting there at the Fed, at the Treasury, they would say, okay, we're going to bail you out, because they don't want to see, you know, a collapse of this huge market in mortgage debt. They simply, it would have a very big impact on the economy. So the idea that they would just let them collapse and just tell everyone who, you know, holds those bonds, you're out of luck, that's just inconceivable.
How huge in relation to everybody else?
Well, each of them has in the trillions. I think Fannie Mae is still the larger, and I believe it's over $2 trillion, and Freddie Mac is over $1 trillion. The next biggest, and I actually don't even know who that is, but it would be in probably $300-400 million. I mean, some of the banks have gotten pretty big in their own right, and you know, probably if you know Citicorp or one of the other big banks were facing a problem, they would probably be bailed out as well. But you know, you don't even have to ask with Freddie or Fannie. It's just almost impossible to imagine that the government would just let them go under.
Yes. Dean, you got a book out soon?
Yes, I actually have a book out already. It's called The Conservative Nanny State, how the wealthy use the government to stay rich and get richer. And actually, if anyone's interested, they could just go on the website and download it directly. It's free to download. You could buy a paperback, but you're welcome to just download it free. And the website's just www.conservativenannystate.org.
I'm writing that down, Conservative Nanny State. I didn't know that myself. That's so unusual.
Yeah, well, we thought about going the traditional route of a book publisher, and we thought, well, you can make a few dollars that way, but I'd rather have people read it, you know. So people could just click in and download if they like. As I say, I know a lot of people like the paperback, and you know, you could of course order it. It's only a few bucks to order. You know, I think it's $7 or $8 to get the paperback. But if you want to just read it online or download it and print it out yourself, people are welcome to do so.
Wonderful. ConservativeNannyState.com.
Org.
Okay, wonderful. Dean Baker, co-director of the Center of Economic and Policy Research. Dean, thanks so much for being with us today. You've given us some great food for thought and explanations on things that we were wondering about, and I appreciate it, and I know our audience does very much. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Now and then we got to talk about money matters, and folks, I think it's coming. I think it's going to be time to pay the piper. I know a little bit about that book, Conservative Nanny State. I did not know that you could download it off the internet. That's great. I will do that myself. ConservativeNannyState.org. Dean's organization does a lot helping the layman, and as you know, I like to say Joe Lunchbucket, try and find his way around the financial world. And he's written some other books, the Social Security, the Phony Crisis, the Benefits of Full Employment. Nothing is going to be on the top bestseller list, but things that everybody should know. Getting Prices Right, the Battle Over the Consumer Price Index, and How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich. Actually, that's what the Conservative Nanny State's about, how the wealthy use the government to stay rich and get richer. And he's been on a lot of TV shows, and CNN, CBS News, PBS NewsHour, and NPR and all that. And he's got a blog called Beat the Press, which is also very good. So once again, our thanks to Dean Baker for being on the program today. I want to play you a song, and there's a story behind this song, and I hope you'll check it out. The song is something that some of you anyway might be familiar with. It's called Fragile by Sting. And I'm going to play you the original recorded version when it was initially released. But it was originally done in a live performance and at a Sting live concert on September the 11th, 2001. It has a very interesting story behind it. So you might want to check that out at unreportednews.net at Billy Shears' page on there. So do check that out, unreportednews.net, and check out the Billy Shears page. And check out the story behind this great Sting song called Fragile.
Forget our friends.
Back with you here in the Guy James Show, Fragile by Sting. And hey, that won't be up on Billy Shear's page over at unreportednews.net until tomorrow, okay? That's going to be his feature of the week. Do go and read the story behind that and what happened on 9/11 and at the concert and all that. You'll find it very interesting. I know you will. Great tune and with an interesting story behind it as well. You are listening to the Guy James Show. I am Guy James, and you are not, and you probably should be very glad you are not. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. During the break there, we had a chance to talk to Bill Richardson's people. We'll be having him on the program very soon. Not this week, and possibly not even next week, but we're trying to hammer out a time that we'll have Bill Richardson on. So, looking forward to that. One of my favorite politicians, no question about it. If we were going to choose somebody on pure qualifications to be president, I don't see why he wouldn't be right at the top of the list. Him and Al Gore, if Al decides to run. Speaking of Al Gore, those bastards. Now I'm reading that the electric company down in Tennessee said they most assuredly did not give anybody Al Gore's information about what his electric costs were at his home. So if they didn't give it to anybody, that means it was obtained in some nefarious fashion. Who knows? And the outfit that brought it out is one of those right-wing organizations that are doing their very best. And they're very best, and make no mistake about it, they're very good at doing what they do. But don't you think this is an in-your-face to Al Gore, and the message is, don't you think it's a big message? Don't think about it, Gore. Don't even think about getting in the race, because if you do, this is just a precursor of what we might do to you. In fact, we've got a lot of things that we'll do to you. So we'll make your life miserable. You'll be sorry you got in the race, Mr. Gore. Don't you think that's what the message is? Don't you think they're scared to death that Al Gore will get in there with his popularity right now? Hey, I'm one of those people, I believe if Al Gore got in there right now, I think Al Gore can win this thing. I do. And with his fame and popularity right now at an all-time high, most likely, well, I think he might not have that much trouble raising the money either. So I think this whole flap about his electric bill is nothing more than a warning coming from the right-wing neocons. Mr. Gore, we're afraid of you, and we'll do anything we can to keep you from running and getting the office of the presidency. That's what this is all about. And as it turns out, it was much ado about nothing anyway. He pays that green fee or whatever they call it down there at $400-some-odd a month, and he's got a big house, sure, and his electric bill's going to be high. He's putting in solar panels. You know, you weren't going to legitimately get Al Gore on this thing, and that's what it was all about. They were out to get Al Gore. They hate the fact that he got that Oscar the other night. They really hate the fact that he's up for a Nobel Prize. They will just be beside themselves if he gets a Nobel Prize slopped on the top of this Oscar thing. My God, they will go absolutely berserk. As Bill Press and I were discussing yesterday, they'll be like those people in the movies where their heads start spinning around, because here we have Bill Clinton, unquestionably the most popular man in the world. There isn't any ifs, ands, or buts about that. The most popular man in the world, an ex-president of the United States, Bill Clinton, and surely right on his heels is Al Gore. So here we have the tandem of a very successful, well-known, and beloved around the world administration, the Clinton administration, and we've got a president of the United States that's got all the popularity of Sluggo. A dunce. I don't have enough words for him. And it's killing him. It's just killing him that their boy, and I'm not going to call him my boy, their boy, one Junior Bush, has the popularity that he has. He's, as my father would say, a stumble bum. And here we have Bill Clinton and Al Gore enjoying immense popularity. Let's go to the phone. We got just a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
How you doing?
Good.
Miss you on the... What you call it? The website?
Oh. What's on your mind today, Winnie?
Anyway, I was just going to call about Al Gore. Isn't that funny? That's all they can try to find out about him.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the most honorable and decent people in politics.
Absolutely. And it's just eating him up. It's just eating him up.
I remember when I got a whole list from when he was running for office and for president, and a whole list being spread around the churches, and one of them was that he claimed that his mother sang "Look for the Union Label" when he was a baby.
Uh-huh.
And you know that wasn't written back then. And I said, it was a joke.
Oh.
It was a joke, you know.
Most likely it was.
Okay, well, I'll let you go.
Thank you, Juanita. Good to hear from you. They'll do anything they can. And the smear, you know, the only trouble with this long, long, long campaign, oh, yeah, long campaign, is the Spinmeisters and the Hatchet Men are going to have to work overtime as well. They're going to have more time to dig up dirt, or in this case, manufacture dirt on people like Al Gore and a John Kerry and all that. But I do think they'll rue the day they started this flip-flopper thing. I really do, as we discussed yesterday most especially with John McCain and with Mitt Romney as well. Both of those guys have flip-flopped more than John Kerry ever thought of on important issues. And we're going to talk about John McCain a little bit more in the second hour. God, Falwell, he's sucking up, kissing Falwell's rear, trying to get in his good graces, and then... there's a little flap that's going to be going on about that, and we'll talk about that coming up in the second hour. It's actually very, very humorous, this little flap that'll take place. I don't know how in the world the Republicans are going to nominate any of these schmoes they got running and do it with clear conscience. How are they going to satisfy the fundies? They're not going to be able to satisfy the fundies. Plain and simple. They will not. Can you imagine McCain and Romney being a Mormon? And Giuliani with with his personal history? Oh, man. Can you imagine Falwell's eyes would bleed if he had to stand up and say that he supported one of those guys. I mean, he couldn't do it. There's no way he could do it and explain it to his sheep. And I do mean sheep in that sort of way. Well, it's coming up on news time here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour for, a shade over 5 minutes. Listen up, you might hear something really important on there. Get yourself a soda, hot dog, I don't care. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. In comments to members of the House Budget Committee today, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said U.S. financial markets are working well and functioning normally. In prepared statements, Bernanke added expectations remain unchanged for the U.S. economy, and there's a possibility of some strengthening by the middle of the year. Trading on Wall Street today has been volatile as stocks turned higher after the Dow plunged yesterday before closing just above 400 down. It was the biggest drop since markets reopened after 9/11. Next month, the U.S. and North Korea will meet for group talks. This is part of the agreement reached on February 13th in which North Korea agreed to work towards nuclear disarmament. Representatives from both countries will meet in New York City and work towards the normalization of relations. In Afghanistan, local villagers are bracing for more violence this spring as the Taliban trains more suicide bombers. The Taliban, which said they have already sent 1,000 suicide bombers to northern Afghanistan, are training another 2,000. Has adopted suicide bombing tactics, which before 2005 were virtually unheard of in Afghanistan. In Washington, President Bush and 36 Republican senators will vote against 9/11 anti-terror legislation if the measure includes permission for airport baggage screeners to unionize. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff compared baggage screeners to troops on the front line of a war, saying our armed forces aren't allowed union affiliation, and therefore neither should airport screeners. In Spain, another suspect has been charged in the 2004 train bombings. The Moroccan man becomes the eighth prime suspect of 29 defendants to be charged in the attack that killed 191 people and wounded 1,800 on a Madrid commuter train in March of 2004. Iraq has received a commitment from Syria to attend talks that will include the West. Iraq's neighbors will join the U.S. and the U.K. for a regional conference on security issues concerning Iraq. Iran is considering attending, and it's believed they will probably accept the invitation. In the West Bank this morning, Israeli soldiers shot three Palestinians accused of being militants. Israelis claim one of the three killed was a senior member of an Islamic Jihad group. In San Diego, the Roman Catholic Diocese, anticipating unfavorable rulings and potentially large settlements, filed for bankruptcy just hours before it was scheduled to go to court in the first of 140 sexual abuse lawsuits. This is the fifth diocese in the nation to file Chapter 11. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Federal weather forecasters say the La Nina weather pattern now developing could produce an active Atlantic hurricane season this year. Historically, a La Nina means less rain in the south, a mild spring and summer in the north, and fewer hurricanes in the Pacific Ocean. A breakthrough scientific study say antioxidant vitamins do not live to their claim that they will extend the lives of the millions of people who take them. At least 10% of Americans and Europeans take antioxidants, spending more than $2 billion annually. And the CDC says one of every four women between the ages of 14 and 59 is infected with the sexually transmitted virus known to cause cervical cancer. Controversy has surrounded states arguing for mandatory inoculation of teenage women with the vaccine that prevents the infection. As part of its recovery plan, the ailing Chrysler Group is offering thousands of its workers as much as $100,000 to leave the company. Chrysler, which posted losses last year of nearly $1.5 billion, plans to cut 13,000 jobs to lower operating costs. The country's largest natural gas pipeline company posted a quarterly loss of $175 million. El Paso says the loss is a result of the costs associated with the sale of pipeline capacity. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.12 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 60, the NASDAQ is up 13, and the S&P 500 is up 9. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Guy James, indeed. I'm Guy James, and you're not. And welcome to the show. Glad to have all of you along with us on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to all you folks over at iTunes and all you folks at the Head On Radio Network, and everybody over at Democrats.com and Democratic Underground, and the many links that we have around the Internet. So glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. Had an interesting call during the break, and I hope he calls back. We lost out for some reason. I have a feeling that his cell phone went dead or something. It wasn't that great of a connection, but I do hope he calls back. We're talking about all the criticism that is suddenly appearing about Bill Clinton, and all of it all of it is being a backhanded slap at Hillary Clinton. First of all, Hillary Clinton is Hillary Clinton, and Bill Clinton is Bill Clinton, and as evidence of what the gentleman was talking about, I think it was John from Fort Myers that called. John, if you're out there, give us a call back. I'd love to hear from you on the subject. And he nailed it right on the money. And Tweety Matthews, Chris Matthews was doing it, I believe, last evening or the evening before when I saw a bit of his show, saying, oh, do you think Bill Clinton can behave himself during all this? Do you think Bill Clinton won't hurt Hillary's campaign because he'll do this and he'll do that? You know, alluding to things that Bill Clinton might do, that he's a rogue elephant out there running around. I got news for you, Tweety, Chris, and everybody else that might be doing this. If you're doing this to knock down Hillary, if you don't like Hillary, why don't you do it in a straightforward manner instead of this backhanded way that you're trying it? Why don't you just talk about Hillary and not her husband If you want to disparage her, and you have reason to do so, and what she stands for and the issues, please do so. But not, let's not play these little children's games about talking about how her husband is such a bad boy, and he might he might cause trouble for her and so forth. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is John again.
Hi, John. You sound better this time.
I got a different phone now.
Good.
I
was telling our audience, you brought up a great point, and I wanted to talk about that today, and I was so glad you called about it.
What has so many facets to it, and the manner in which Bill Clinton is criticized these days, if you recall, when he was president, the right wing was criticizing him for his quote-unquote foreign adventurism. Given the our involvement in Somalia and Bosnia and so on and so forth, and of his use of the heavy hand of the federal government, the Elian Gonzalez thing, you know how much they were and in fact the right wing was criticizing the use of the federal government, the intrusiveness of the federal government, and using Waco and Ruby Ridge and all of this as examples. And you notice they never bring up those things anymore.
No.
Because that would be way too close to home to start talking about the intrusiveness and heavy-handedness of a government with its own citizens and foreign adventurism abroad. And those criticisms were unjust when they issued them back then, but they would be very just if for someone talking about this administration today. So when they talk about Bill Clinton and they criticize him, it seems like they're being very careful not to stray into any of those.
They don't want to sit there and have to drink their own poison. I mean, you're right on the money with that. And
Cal Thomas, in his I read one of his columns the other day, and he was criticizing all of the fact that Bill Clinton, in the first 3 years after when he left the White House, how many millions he had amassed in speaking fees. Mm-hmm. And conveniently, not mentioning the fact that Ronald Reagan was getting $1 million per the moment he stepped out of office. And while he still had his marbles, Reagan was collecting some extraordinary speaking fees, but that gets somehow lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, you're so right.
And this thing out of I noticed that AOL linked the explosion at the airport in Iraq, or the bomb attack, or rocket propelled grenades, or whatever they were, to Cheney's being there and how Cheney, was lucky to escape that. And
oh, at Bagram, yeah.
Put them together in that story. I don't know if Cheney really belonged in that story. It sounded to me very much like the story that supposedly someone at Al Qaeda put out right after the election in November, how Al Qaeda was so delighted with the Democratic victory and that sort of thing. It seems to me that somebody is manipulating sources there, and that there are like back channels for these kinds of communiques to come out, and no one really knows where they came from. And they seem to be reflecting a heck of a lot more about what the neocons are thinking and wanting to put out there than what Al Qaeda or any other radical Islamic group wants to put out there.
Well, first of all, they don't even want to talk about why Dick Cheney all of a sudden's on this trip, this whirlwind trip out of the country. They don't want him here. They don't want him within the borders of this country right now. Well, the Scooter Libby thing is going to come to an end. Secondly, the interview was the stories have been laughable. He heard a big boom. Oh, what a shock! He heard a big boom. I suppose everybody for miles heard the big boom. What did that have to do with anything? I mean, and somehow they found out he was there. Somehow the government, somebody leaked it inside the government that he was there, or they wouldn't have known it. They didn't want to. But instead of talking about pertinent information, I heard a big boom. I was fascinated by that.
Well, it's. Yeah, I know. And trying to lionize him in this story is, I mean, I didn't listen to any of the right-wing radio today, but I could imagine Sean Hannity giving up a prayer of thanks for...
Oh, he's a victim?
...Cheney's safe return.
Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, John, some people, not one, not two, but three emails I got yesterday, and they all said the same thing in so many words. They said it's a good thing you couldn't be arrested for your thoughts. Man. Yeah. And I said, well enough said, but I thought it was fascinating that I got not one, but two, but three emails saying that. Good thing you can't be arrested for my thoughts.
Well, back to the Clinton thing. I'm sorry, my mind is racing way ahead of my tongue. So if my transitions are a little,
I'm often afflicted with that myself.
I'm not the greatest fan of Bill Clinton. He did a lot of things that I'm not happy with, that I'd rather he hadn't done.
Yeah, me too.
I wouldn't put it at the top of my list, nor Hillary. But it would seem to me that if you really want to be effective turning the public away from the Clintons, because they're embracing them as a pair, it's a matched set as far as the neocons are concerned, and that's the way they're kind of selling their ideas, you would go to the things that really matter that I think that they have done that are questionable. But anytime you get into that territory, I think you're way too close to the stuff that's close to the neocons' heart. First of all, giving pardons to people at the end of his term that were, you know, was probably had a lot to do with donations that Clinton got during his two campaigns.
You're right. They can't go there.
Yeah, absolutely
can't.
Not. The only thing that's really left for them is the sex. That's really all that is left. And, you know, the day that Bush or some other neocon president gets caught in that, then that goes too, because they don't want to bring up anything that will remind people of that. Of course, I doubt they would ever get caught in that, because they just...
What are they going to do if they nominate McCain or Giuliani? How are they going to explain that end of it? They weren't under oath, okay?
They won't have to, and we won't make them. That's just the way that it works.
You're right.
The left does not make them. They don't. We don't have the left, the progressives, whatever it's bigger than the Democrats, but as a whole, we don't do that kind of politicking. I'm not, saying that the Democrats are a bunch of Boy Scouts. I'm sure that in every campaign, national, state, and local, you've got people on both sides that are doing things that they ought not be doing, and things that are stretching or breaking rules of ethics. But we don't take somebody's past mistakes in that kind of light. We just don't. I mean, when did we ever do that? I mean, when Senior Bush was in office, there were a great many rumors circulating around, but that was all they were. It was just it was the lightest touch of rumors, but they were persistent.
Well, and to go a step further there with Junior and his National Guard record. It was brought up, it was dropped, and it stayed dropped. It's just the way it is. That flap was over when Dan Rather went goodbye. That was it. No more.
And you probably recall that early in the last presidential campaign, actually before the primaries were over, but when it seemed like John Kerry was really the one to beat, there was a rumor about him having had some sort of dalliance with and then that came up, and then it just disappeared quickly. So, you know, if there had been any substance to it, it would have stuck around. They would have made sure it had.
But it worked. It worked in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
It really worked in South Carolina.
That's because they have this beacon at Bob Jones University. Broadcast stupid rays, and it covers South Carolina pretty well.
Thank
and it
you.
Gets out to a lot of the neighboring states, and I think
stupid
that's
rays.
How that works.
You win the prize. You win the prize for the phrase of the day. That's good. I like that.
So if anybody, any of your listeners drive by Bob Jones University, look for that tower. It's got to be on the campus there somewhere.
Yeah. Stupid race. Hey, thanks so much for your call. It's really good to hear from you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Brought up some great points. That was a great call. A stupid race from Bob Jones University. I'm going to write that down here. Stupid. I want to be sure and spell stupid right. Never forget that picture of that guy, that freeper in Washington at the with his sign misspelling stupid. Bob Jones. Bob Jones, one of my favorite people, as you might expect. Speaking of Bob Jones, where's that little article? Had a little article here. Here it is. Not especially what I was going to talk about today, but while we're on the subject of Bob Jones, let's move over to just right next door to Jerry Falwell. The title of this was McCain sucking up to everybody, but will he denounce Falwell's claims that naive Christians are being duped on global warming? John McCain's commitment to the issue of global warming may be the latest casualty of his do-anything-to-win approach to the Republican presidential primary. Last week, McCain took swipes at the Bush administration in a political stunt where he called the administration's record on global warming terrible and urged for tougher federal action to stop it. As in the L.A. Times, February 22nd. Over the weekend, however, and you'll find this most interesting, the very Reverend Jerry Falwell, who... Man, I tell you, when I think of Falwell, that picture of his mug comes up in my mind's eye, and I anyway, over the weekend, however, the Reverend Jerry Falwell, who McCain needs for his campaign and who hosted a reception for him last week, used his weekly sermon to call global warming Satan's attempt. Get this. Jerry Falwell used his weekly sermon to call global warming, quote, Satan's attempt to redirect the church's primary focus from evangelism to environmentalism, end quote. Is that cool or what? Falwell said some naive Christian leaders are now being or have been duped about global warming, and that while Christians should be responsible environmentalists, they should not be first-class nuts. This coming from that renowned scientist and global expert, Jerry Falwell. Maybe this is what McCain meant when he said, I'll probably get into trouble, but what's wrong to sucking up to everybody? He said that February 27th, 07. Senator McCain may not see a problem with sucking up to everybody in his win-at-all-cost campaign, but if he is serious about confronting global warming, he must either denounce Reverend Falwell's outrageous claims about climate change or explain why he agrees with him, said Democratic National Committee spokesman Louis Miranda. McCain can't have it both ways on this one. He can't pretend to be a moderate on issues like climate change when pandering to extremists like Jerry Falwell, who liken passion for faithful stewardship of the environment to doing Satan's work. There you have it. Whenever you hear on the news about him picking up out an example of a Muslim extremist somewhere in the world saying something radical, also conjure up the picture of one Jerry Falwell in the pulpit trying to convince his naive parishioners that environmentalism is the work of Satan. Satan's attempt to redirect the church's primary focus from evangelism to environmentalism. You know what the thing is with some of those people is, hell no, use the planet up, we're leaving anyway. Let's waste it. Let's use all the oil, let's chop down all the trees, let's use up all the fresh water. And so half the species become extinct. So what? We're leaving anyway. That is the idea of some of these people. Obviously, it works for Jerry Falwell as well. I've got to frame this one. I love that. I really do love that. Satan's attempt to redirect the church's primary focus from evangelism to environmentalism. So next time you do hear on the news, on Fox, wherever, you hear him picking out one of these extremists, Muslim clerics, saying crazy things, you think we don't have them in this country too? I could pick out three of them real easy. Dobson, Falwell, and Robertson. And oh, there are a whole lot more to go along with those. And that has nothing to do with Christianity. In fact, in my humble opinion, those three people I just mentioned have little to do with Christianity in its true form. They're egotistical, maniacal charlatans who twist and turn the Bible in any direction they want it to go so that they can get an army of faithful servants to their ministries to send them millions and millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's literally thrown down a rat hole on huge media empires so that they can broadcast crap like Satan's attempt to redirect the church's primary focus from evangelism to environmentalism. How are you going to explain that, Johnny McCain? How are you going to explain that? You criticize Mr. Bush for his environmental concerns about what his administration's done for the environment, and then you hear your pal, your newfound pal, I might say, add, Mr. Falwell, say something like that. Oh, how are you going to square that, Johnny McCain? How will you do it? And to expound on John's call a bit earlier, and it was a great call, it is funny that the charges that are flying, they are very, he had a great point. They're staying completely away from some areas because they know they're just guilty as hell. That the Bush administration is guilty as hell, or Giuliani or McCain is guilty as hell. You know, take a look at the sex deal. That's just one, but that's the one that was sensationalized. Our wonderful special prosecutor and the bunch of kooks that were on the impeachment committee, Republican congressman. Kooks, yes, absolutely kooks. Dan Burton, what's that ass from Chicago, the other one? They found out he'd been unfaithful. Dan Burton had an illegitimate child. I mean, you know. We all know what that was about. And yes, Bill Clinton strayed straight into territory that he should not have. He literally got caught with his pants down. Shouldn't have. Shouldn't have indulged in that. Shouldn't have got caught if he did indulge in that. Shouldn't have lied under oath. But when you stop and think about the effects that actually had on the people of the United States, and on the government of the United States. And then you look at this administration we have right now. But take a step further. Take it a step further. Don't just look at this administration when it comes to that. You're going to tell me that Bill Clinton, and you know, I'm talking in circles here, but Rudy Giuliani, let's just take him for example. Let's just take him for example. Rudy Giuliani, thrice married, had a, my God, what a sordid scene going on with Rudy Giuliani, with his wife living in Gracie Mansion and him bringing his mistress there and trying to kick the wife out and going to live with, you know, it doesn't get any worse than that. This took place in the newspapers in New York City. On September the 10th, 2001, Rudy Giuliani was known as a cad, as a philanderer. That's what he was known as. His reputation was going down the sewer on September 10th, 2001. And September 11th happens and he became a hero by being an ordinary mayor, going to funerals, making speeches, doing things that any mayor in his right mind with any sense of duty whatsoever would have done. And he became a hero. for doing his job. No better, no worse than anybody else would have done it. And here's a man who was a philanderer of the highest order. We know this. It's documented. And I'm not saying that's sending him to hell. Don't get me wrong here. Plenty of guys have done that in this country, and I'm not going to condemn them all. They do what they do. That's what it is. Doesn't make it right, but that's how it is. But Bill Clinton was a special case. He was a special case. Because his philandering was worse than anybody else's ever. Surely worse than any Republicans. Surely worse than any of the disgusting things that Strom Thurmond was known to have done. Certainly, rumors about his daddy, rumors about Ike, rumors about all these people. But we know what Giuliani did. And they're thinking about making him the nominee for the presidency of the United States on the Republican ticket. And I might add, John McCain's right in there, too. John McCain was also a philanderer and an adulterer. So, the way I see it, what are they going to do? What can they do? They can't possibly nominate either one of those guys without looking to be the biggest hypocrites in the world, can they? I mean, if they nominate either one of those people, we should have ourselves a big belly laugh the next day because, honestly, it would be really, really funny for them to back away from all the principles and the morality of the great Republican Party that they've shoved in everybody's faces for, lo, a couple decades now. About that big bad Bill Clinton. And they would nominate either one of those fellas. Don't know how they could ever say another word about Bill Clinton again for the rest of his life. I really don't know how. I don't know how they could. It'll be interesting to see if either one of those boys gets the nomination. It really will. I think right now the money's on one or the other. Maybe Romney will come up out of the weeds. And it is surprising to me. This flap that is developing over Romney's Mormonism, I think he is probably going through one of the same type of things that John Kennedy did over being Catholic and he's being Mormon. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Harry Reid a Mormon? Isn't Orrin Hatch a Mormon? I don't know. I'm pretty sure about Harry Reid. I'm not sure about Orrin Hatch. His name just popped into my head. Just about everybody a very high percentage of the people in and around Salt Lake City and for 500 miles around are LDS. Positions of authority. But, I happen to know a lot about the Mormon Church. I happen to have studied it. And it's fascinating to me to see a lot of people acting like like Romney might be the devil himself because of being a Mormon. People just don't understand it. And they should go, take a look and try and understand what Mormonism's all about. It's no big secret or anything like that. It's part of the Christian church, and people should check it out. We're going to take a quick break right now. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be back. Let's see if we can find the right buttons here. Having one of those bad button days. We'll be back in just a moment.
I scare myself just thinking about you. I scare myself. process is different when we're together.
I'm also so much better. I feel better.
For the stars have crossed our paths forever.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, yeah, we're on the downslide. Only about 24 minutes left in the program, and I'd love to have you give us a call today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254.
That is a real, honest-to-God drama. Now, it may not fit the high-minded views of a lot of news professionals.
High-minded, John?
People who think that, you know, their news program is just another part of Foreign Affairs Quarterly. That only certain kind of news is worthy of their discussing. Those people are snobs.
I guess you and Bill O'Reilly would know, huh, John?
When they see a story, go, ooh, icky, I don't want to do that. I did this for years. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I've approached many stories and said, that story isn't worth our trouble. It has always been a mistake. Always. Every single time I did it. And so when I see people like this guy.
There's a war on.
Maybe, just maybe, people are a little weary, Mr. Cooper, of your war coverage, and they'd like a little something else. Maybe that's why they all thundered to the story.
There's a war on.
My complaint about this is what you're listening to when you hear that guy lecture the audience, is you're listening to news guy snobbery, essentially saying, I'm better than you. I know what you want to hear about, but I'm better than that story. I'm too high class for that story. I won't stoop to what you want to hear about. I'm not playing that game. People want to hear about the Anna Nicole story? I'm happy to tell.
Oh, I know you are, John. John Gibson of the infamous Fox Comedy Channel and Mr. Bill O'Reilly. Didn't both of them get their TV starts doing salacious, scandalous stories on these entertainment shows or something like that? And now they call themselves journalists. Didn't both of them get their starts like that? You know, I can just see Walter Cronkite, Huntley or Brinkley, talking about the Ann and Nicole Smith story day after day after day. I can just see Walter Cronkite and Chet Huntley and David Brinkley coming on every night and breathlessly telling us about the DNA test that are taking place now. Breaking news taking place in the Bahamas of the DNA test of little, whatever the child's name is. Anna Nicole Smith. Oh my God. I actually heard him say on MSNBC, home of that Rita Cosby, saying that their ratings were up fivefold over that damn story. Fivefold. That idiot judge. Those crazy people. That whole circus. Anna Nicole Smith. Britney Spears cutting her hair and gone to rehab every other day. How much more of that stuff? You talk about news. Is that news? I have a suggestion. And I'll get to the phones in just a second. I have a suggestion that they need to take the body of James Brown and Anna Nicole Smith and, I don't know, get some kind of a refrigerated glassed-in thing and go around and put them on display like a circus all around the country, because that's what the death of those both of those people are, and Nicole Smith far more than the others. I am just weary of turning on the TV and hearing about Anna Nicole Smith and Britney Spears' hair. And, oh, my God, the Oscars and what people were wearing. And who gives a damn when it all shakes out of what importance is any of that on the news? Am I being old-fashioned? And am I being cruel? I just want to pull my hair out when I see. You know, the Oscar story is still going on. These people get up and pat themselves on the back and pat each other on the back. They're filthy rich. They're all sitting in there in their Christian Dior's. He's still around. I don't know. Dresses. Yves Saint Laurent or whoever. And what did you wear tonight? Oh, and what did? Oh, and her jewelry came from here. And her dress came from here. And it cost $20,000. Are people living vicariously through these clowns? Is that it? I don't get it. Let's go to the phone. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, is this the Mr. Guy James Show?
This would be it.
This would be it. This is Eric from Vermont.
Hi, Eric.
Boy, I don't know. You want me to talk about celebrity and how much the news wants to defray the American people from real news? Or would you like me to talk about...
No, let's talk about celebrity.
You don't want to talk about the great weapons with the American dates and weapons and stuff like that for some sort of thing like that, right? You want to talk about celebrity?
Yeah, I've started this off. What cool. Is the fascination with these stories? What is it? Do you get it? Do you understand it?
It's like, I don't know, I'm 56 years old, and it seems like, gosh, I can remember going back into the early 60s, mid-60s, and reach for the star. It's all tabloid news. It's something to defray the American public. At that time, what I thought when I was a teenager, I thought it was pretty much the concept of going in there and the little ladies, you know, sitting there, and they didn't have anything else better to do with their lives, and reach for the star and tabloid news and watch soap box operas and so on and so forth. And apparently, they have Rupertized everything that's going on here in terms of defraying the American people from actually receiving any sort of news. So we're going to get that, American Idol, well, you know, whatever it happens to be. It, you know, it's the same game to me anyway. And you don't hear any news. You're not going to hear anything, you know, like maybe the weapons that had American whatever they are on them. You're not going to hear them. You're not going to hear them. And you're not going to hear that at all. So it's all big celebrity kind of thing, and these people's lives are not any more important than to worry about James Brown. I mean, and I love James Brown.
Me
James
too,
Brown's
but
artist.
You know.
But when you emphasize so much on the celebrity news rather than news that actually affects people's lives, people just sort of like are in denial of what the real news that affects their lives. And if the mainstream media keeps pumping that to them, they're going to keep receiving it. Why they keep accepting it like that, I don't know.
Well, it's a mystery to me. It really is. I, as anybody who listens to me often enough would know, I'm just very anti-Hollywood. I mean, I like a good movie as much as the next person. They don't make very many anymore. But I just fail to understand the glamorization and the celebrity of these people and why they matter politically and all that. It's just it hasn't sunk into me, and I don't think it ever will.
But it has for a long time.
Oh yeah,
it has with the Jane Fonda. It has with Caprito, whatever his name is. I'm sorry, whoever. So I mean, the left likes it when it favors them. The right likes it when it favors
You're
them.
Right.
And it's all cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the reality of it, you know, like, who are these people? I mean, I like a lot of the people that have these certain political viewpoints, and that's nice that they have a platform to say something about it, but is it any more fair or less fair than somebody that is a common person that's working in Vermont or Florida or wherever, making minimum wage and trying to, you know, get enough money so that they can actually feed their family, maybe get some prescription drugs for the child that maybe has a strep throat that week, or the elderly that maybe are making a choice between prescription drugs. I mean, what is newsworthy?
You are so right.
What is newsworthy? Celebrity, and to defray the people's attention off of something that actually affects their lives, because denial.
It's far more important to talk to the guy that's getting off work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the local factory and find out about life from him and what his family's like and his work is like and all that. Far more important and far more interesting to me than some glamour queen in Hollywood and what she did in the movie and who her boyfriend is. I mean, it makes give me the lunch bucket guy.
The lunch bucket. The lunch bucket of the week. The Corey Stone lunch bucket of the week goes to Britney Spears, who shaved her head off.
Yeah.
And they will take that hair and they will put it into the museum in Washington, call the Smithsonian, and keep that for another 200 years so that people can see actually what fools we have made ourselves out of.
I think you're right.
Our news.
I think you're right. Set it, put it in there in the Smithsonian right down there where the display of George Washington's tent is. it has equal importance to some people. I got a board full. Thank you for your call. I enjoyed discussing this subject. Thank you, Eric.
I apologize. I just get out of work sometimes, and I'm a little bit feisty.
You're right on there. Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Let's go to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
I got a little info. You were talking about Orrin Hatch, and I checked it out for you. Orrin Hatch was a former Latter-day Saints bishop who does not drink, has taken more money from wine, beer, and liquor groups this year than any other congressional candidate. He also takes a good portion of money from the tobacco and gambling industries.
And he's still Mormon?
Yeah, I like them.
Whoa, because, you know, I don't know how it is anymore. It's been a while, but normally when you go to Salt Lake City and you go in a restaurant, in a decent restaurant where they've got coffee cups on the table or so forth, they'll have the coffee cups turned upside down. And you have to ask for coffee in a lot of places. They won't even offer it to you.
Yeah, I was a Mormon for like 13 years, although I'll confess I was a Jack Mormon.
Yeah, well, there's a difference. But only a Jack Mormon would take money from liquor and tobacco interest. That's beyond the pale for a good Mormon.
I'll give you the link on this if you want it. It's DeseretNews.com, DeseretNews.com.
Okay, Deseret. Yeah, I've heard of that out there before. You know, okay,
but it's a pretty interesting article. That's just the opening statements of it. But I thought you'd find that rather interesting.
Well, I do because, you know, I know people who are such devout Mormons, and you will meet those types, particularly in Salt Lake area, that are such devout Mormons that they won't even go in the temple because they don't feel worthy enough to get a recommend from their bishop to even go in the temple because they're, you know, like this, the alcohol, the stimulants, the tobacco, if they've indulged stuff, they would hold back from even going to the temple. So it's amusing to me that a guy like Orrin Hatch would take money from them. It really is.
It really is. This is like these Southern Baptists here. They're so against gambling. Every time there's a liquor referendum or a gambling referendum comes up, boy, they just plaster you with all this religious paraphernalia on the evils of all of this. And yet, after Katrina, one of the first things they did was make sure they got those casinos on shore.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They know where the money is. You know, they can always, those people always got a nose for money.
Of course, the casinos are doing good, everybody. Don't worry.
Of course they are.
Fine, they've rebuilt the casinos. It's just the people's homes that's not rebuilt.
Well, you know, we'll get to that sooner or later. But my neighbors go over there about once every 6 weeks. They head on over to Biloxi and... what's that other one up the river a bit?
It would be Gulfport.
Yeah, they go to Gulfport, they go to Biloxi, and I've been to Biloxi, but I can't think of that other one.
I gotta teach you how to pronounce it. Biloxi.
Biloxi, okay. I got Biloxi.
That's a sign of a Yankee there.
Well, I say like Louisville. I say Louisville, right?
I'm sorry, I just had to do that. That's just an old Southern thing here.
I know.
But, hey, guys, just wanted to let you know about that. Also, one thing I wanted to ask you, too, this is just something that I can't get out of my brain, is, you know, Hillary has to be has been making a real big deal that she's been taking money from campaign money from Rupert Murdoch. And does that scare you like it scares me?
Rupert Murdoch's going to have his hooks into every politician if he can. There's any question about it.
I was just kind of interested in your opinion on that, because I'm going to tell you what, I don't particularly like it. That scares me off from Hillary in a heartbeat.
Well, the thing is, you're going to find the tentacles of these people with money like that are broad and deep and into a lot of people's pockets. I wouldn't like the idea that she'd take Rupert Murdoch's money.
I guess the thing that really, really bugs me is I've never seen Rupert Murdoch put money into something that he didn't ask something in return for big time. And that's what scares me. And I just kind of wonder what your feelings are on it. I realize, like you're saying, you know, you can't, you got to take what money you get out there, and sometimes you got to take dirty money that you don't really want. But I just.
That's why I'd never be elected to national office.
That's right, me too.
I'd have to say thank you. No, I hate you. I hate what you do. I hate what you stand for, and I hate your filthy money. That would be me, and I'd say, well, don't bother running anymore, boy, because you're never going to raise a dime.
Yeah, I just can't get it. But that's, hey, I guess, you know, you and me, we're the kind that, you know, we'd rather just live without, and we would live in shame. But
absolutely, I mean, there are politicians that are highly respected on our side of the aisle that have taken money from people that they ought to be ashamed from taking money for it, but they do it anyway. But you know what always tickles me is they come back and they say, well, yeah, I took their money. That doesn't mean that I'm going to, doesn't mean I'm going to vote their way. They just wanted to contribute some money because, you know, they're just such nice people. We had that here in the governor's race here in Florida not long ago. This Charlie Crist, he got, I don't want to go out on a limb and say how much it was, but it was a tremendous amount of money from the insurance industry. And everybody knows on the Gulf Coast, your Gulf Coast, our Gulf Coast, insurance companies either thieving over in your end and not paying off where they should pay, or mm-hmm. charging us triple what they should charge. And Charlie Kiss says, well, I know, but I'm going to use their money to fight against them.
Well, guy, I'm gonna hang up after this, but I want to drop one little smart remark here. Like Sarge's neighbor, State Farm is gone. Bye, bye, buddy.
Hey, I've got a cancellation notice sitting downstairs from State Farm. State Farm regrets that they have to cancel your homeowner's insurance. In fact, they're canceling all the homeowner's insurance of all the condos in Southwest Florida, and I've received the cancellation notice, and you know what that does here? That forces you into the high risk company called Citizens, backed by the state, and it's required by law that they have to charge 25% more than any commercial insurance company, which means the insurance companies have raised their rates sky high, and now if you can't even get insurance with some of these other companies, in fact, no one's accepting new clients right now. you got to go with Citizens, and you're going to get priced right out of the market. You've heard me talk about it before, but these insurance thieves, all along the Gulf Coast, they're being sued over there in Sarge's area. Even good old Trent Lott's upset with them. But they write policies, they try and weasel from paying. And let's face it here, there's not an honest one amongst them. There's not an honest one amongst them. Every one of them over there that I've read have tried to weasel on contracts and say, oh no, it wasn't wind damage, it was water damage, blah, 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 back, or vice versa, and the policy doesn't say this and that. I mean, they've done more weaseling than I think I've ever seen from insurance companies before. And yeah, they took a hit. But that's the deal, baby. Insurance is nothing but gambling. They're gambling that you're going to have an accident or a claim, and you're gambling that you're not. That's what it comes down to. It's gambling. You might as well go over to Biloxi and put your money down on the crap table. It's the same thing. Same thing as playing the stock market. It's gambling. Insurance is gambling. They're taking your money, they're investing your money, they're using their money to make a lot more money, and they're thinking they're never going to have to pay any of it back, or very little. And when they do, oh, they squeal like, as we used to say on the farm, like stuck hogs. Oh no, we can't pay these horrible claims. Oh no, we can't. You wouldn't believe the shenanigans that have taken place in Florida, in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Louisiana. Or should I say Louisiana? You wouldn't believe the shenanigans. Well, a lot of you would. But a lot of dirty, filthy dealings by these companies, and they have no shame. There isn't any question about that. Big business doesn't seem to have any shame anymore. I suppose there are exceptions, and I shouldn't paint everybody with the same brush, but my God, it's getting to be a rough world, isn't it? When you can't trust anybody you deal with anymore. You pay your money to a company like State Farm Insurance for how many years? In my case, where I live, 10 years. No claims. No claims, zero claims. Not a damn dime. And they triple your rates and then cancel you. Yes, sir, that's ethics and business for you. And it's not just the insurance industry. It goes a lot deeper than that, unfortunately. Makes me sad. This is a different America than I was brought up in. It's a completely different America than I want to live in. And I don't know. Maybe we've passed the point of no return and we can't turn back. I don't know. But it's getting tough. It's getting tough to be an old average Joe out here now, isn't it? You know it and I know it. Everybody knows it. Hey, I'm awfully glad you joined us on the program today. I thought it was an interesting show today and appreciated your calls. Once again, I wanted to let you know that we spoke to the Bill Richardson people this afternoon. We'll be having them up and coming here in the next week or two. A little bit different folks than in a lot of campaigns, I must tell you. Not so high and mighty as a lot of the campaigns are. Sometimes that's a tough deal to call some of these campaigns, and they want you to beg, you know. They want you to beg. I'm 23 years old, wet behind the ears, just out of college, is my first political job, and I'm somebody, and you got to beg me to get an interview with my boss, and that's the way a lot of them act. Richardson people didn't act like that. Very nice, very refreshing indeed, and I want to say thank you to Katie over to the Richardson campaign. I have an idea she's listening this afternoon. Anyway, that's about it for today. We're so happy that you've joined us here on the Guy James Show. I do want you to remember that we're part of the Head On Radio Network. Bob and John Fox, Jeff Allen Wolf, Joe Vecchio, Dr. Bill, have I forgotten anybody? Oh, Mark Levine, of course. Glad to be a proud of the Head On Radio Network. Be a part of it. Hey, you've heard from the radical right here in the political spectrum. All that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.